Good morning. How is everybody doing today? I am Brandon Kiley. The show is The Morning Blitz. We are coming to you live here on KCOU 88.1 FM and online at KCOU.FM. Coming up here in just about 10 minutes or so, it could be the key to the Mizzou offense. And I'm not talking about receivers, and I'm not talking about the quarterback play. It ain't sexy, but it's important. We'll discuss it coming up here in about 10 minutes or so. Plus, coming up at 7:45, Dan Zimborski, he literally invented a statistic that looks at projections in baseball. So, how do the Royals project? What does he expect from the Royals as we go throughout the season? As the season is, I mean, we got like 35 games left, guys. 35 games left, and the Royals are still in it. Speaking of the Royals, we got to start with them.
Well, it's down in the count, 0-1. Perkins brings it home. And a fly ball, well hit to right. Back goes Arcia to the wall. He leaps and gone. Gordon.
That is the walk-off home run, and thanks so much to Fox Sports Kansas City for the call. Denny Matthews didn't get too pumped there, but the Royals went on a walk-off yesterday. They couldn't muster up any offense through eight innings. No worries. Alex Gordon in the bottom of the ninth comes up to the plate with Alcides Escobar on base. Hits a 2-1 line drive shot. Puts the Royals up 2-1. Wins the game for the Royals over the Twins last night. And it just is a reminder to me that something about this season just feels different. Something about this season, and it's not just that the Royals are good. Like, I get it. The Royals haven't been good in 30 years. We've heard all the jokes. Like, we've discussed it plenty on this show. And so, yeah, by that and by that virtue alone, clearly it's going to feel a little bit different than it has over the last 30 years, right? It's just going to feel differently because the Royals are actually good, and they're in it going into September. So that's different in and of itself. But more importantly, this feels different than just like this would be different if it was Detroit. This would be different if it was Baltimore, if it was the Angels, if it was the Nationals. It's different because it's just, it's a weird thing to see when you see a team that's on this kind of a run. You don't see it very often. It almost never happens. The Royals went from 5 games back and under 500, 99 games into the year, to 15 games above 500, 130 games into the year. They were under 500 after the All-Star break. I told you guys the statistics. 4 teams have ever made the playoffs when they've been 48-50 through 98 games. Or if they've been, excuse me, not when they've been 48-50. That's what the Royals were. Whenever they were under 500 through just about 100 games. So for this example, it was 98 games. They've made the playoffs 4 times. 3 of which they won the division in a really bad division. The Royals have a chance to do that for the fifth time in league history. It's been done 4 times. The Royals could be the 5th team to ever do this. I'm not talking about in the last 15 years, in the last 20 years, to ever do this. So is it different? Yeah, hell yeah, it's a little bit different. The only fear that I have with this team is that they're getting too banged up too late. Hosmer's already out till, what, probably mid-September with that hairline fracture in his wrist. Yordano Ventura skipping a day tomorrow with a sore, or tonight actually, excuse me, with a sore back. Omar Infante going to miss a few days with shoulder inflammation. They're getting a little bit banged up. Now, is that a huge problem? No, maybe not. And it's good that they're giving Yordano Ventura the day off if it's nothing serious. I'm glad they're willing to do that. And I'm glad that Omar Infante is getting the day off. And it's good. It is a very good thing that they have Christian Colon, a guy who you feel okay with starting a few days at second. These are all good things. It's not good that they're hurt, but it's good that the Royals can continue winning when they're not playing. And with 31 games left, the Royals have a legitimate shot to make it to the playoffs. And by legitimate shot, I mean they're leading the division by a game and a half. You got 30 games left. You got 6 games against the Tigers remaining. And you're up a game and a half. You control your own destiny with 30 games to go, just over a month remaining in the season. The season ends on September 28th. It's August 27th. And on August 27th, basically 32 days before the season ends, the Kansas City Royals, the freaking Royals, who were not, they were 2 games below 500 just a month and a half ago. Just about a month ago. They were under 500 a month ago. The team that was under 500 a month ago, coming out of the All-Star break, is now in first place by a game and a half on the Detroit freaking Tigers. So yeah, it feels a little bit different. And last night, I read from Sam Mellinger of the Kansas City Star after that incredible walk-off home run, after a night when Kansas City is at its highest, after a night when the Royals do something that the Royals never seem to do. They come back. They get a win in a game that they couldn't get any offense. They've done that a few times this year, but it's rare. They were able to accomplish something that seems like it's something the Royals needed to be able to do down the stretch. Win games 2-1. Win games in games that you don't expect to win. Beat the teams that you're supposed to beat. They accomplished all of this last night. And then Ned Yost has to come out and just poo-poo all over the city. There was only 13,000 fans in the stadium last night. Look, that's not good. You got to have more fans than 13,000 in the stadium. You got to do it. And so Ned Yost goes up to the podium and says, quote, "I mean, what, 13,000 people got to see a great game?" He said sarcastically. Quote, "We're in a pennant race. Yeah, we've been working on trying to build this team for the last 3 or 4 years to put ourselves in a position where we can contend for a championship. And not only in the division, but we want to contend for a world championship. It's really, really important we have our fans behind us at the stadium. I know it's a school night, but I've been through this before in Atlanta in 1991 when it didn't matter what night it was. That place was packed at the end of August and September. The fans really got into it." Okay, so a couple things. First of all, it's pretty convenient that Ned Yost brings up Atlanta. And Sam Mellinger mentions this in his column. They played a home game on August 26th, a Monday night, which is interesting because it's basically one night removed from the Royals. 23 years earlier, but one night removed from the Royals. First place was in the balance. And 13,000 Braves fans showed up. Huh. That's weird. That number sounds pretty familiar. So you're telling me that it's not just a problem in Kansas City, but, you know, most places have trouble with attendance? That's weird. Never would have expected that. Oh, but wait. It's been 4 years of building this thing? Excuse me, Ned Yost. I'll take 30 years for 100. I've never seen this team win. I'm 21 years old. I'm about to graduate college after this year. I've never seen the Royals be good. 2003 was the only time that I can remember in my lifetime. It happened also in 1994. 2003 is the only time that I can remember when this team was legitimately in it in August. One time, 21 years, one time. And I'm not alone. Been 29 years. Since the Royals made the playoffs. So yeah, Royals fans are a little skeptical. Royals fans are having a tough time buying in. Tough luck, Ned. Tough luck. Them's the draws, I guess. That's just how it works out. Now, like I said, should there be more fans at the stadium? Sure. But it's a Tuesday night. There wasn't any promotions. It's hot as hell outside. And there were just a lot of people that didn't want to go to a ball game. And you know what? I don't blame them. And they don't need the manager, some tone-deaf manager coming out here telling them how to spend their hard-earned money. Bad look by you, Ned Yost. Good look by you, Kansas City Royals. Coming up next, it is very possible this is going to be the key to the Mizzou offense. And I ain't talking about the receivers. We'll discuss it next on the Morning Blitz. KCOU, 88.1 FM, KCOU.FM. So no. And welcome back. It is the Morning Blitz here on KCOU, 88.1 FM, and online at KCOU.FM. Dan Zimborski, he invented a statistic. He is much smarter than I am. He can tell us exactly what to expect from the Royals down the stretch. He's coming up here at 7:45. But right now, it's the key to the Mizzou offense. It's been the key to the Mizzou offense for almost 10 years now. And nobody's talking about it. And it has nothing to do with Matty Monk. It has nothing to do with the receivers. It has nothing to do with all of the things that we've been critical of on this team. A lot of Mizzou fans think of Missouri as this pass-happy offense. And that's fine, and it kind of can be from time to time, but it's just as, if not more, important that Mizzou has a good running game. And it's not sexy, it's not flashy, it's not a running game that's going to break off consistent 40 or 50-yard runs. But they run the football a lot, and they run it really well. Going all the way back to 2007, when Mizzou's been good, they've been a good running team. Last year, 12-2. They were 16th in the country in the run game, and they rushed for 240 yards a game. 2011, they rushed for 2,050 yards per game. 2010, they rushed for 160 yards per game, went 10-3. 2008, basically same story as 2010. Go 10-4, run for 155 yards per game. And then in 2007, the year when Mizzou had a legitimate shot to go to the national title, they rushed for 180 yards a game, went 12-2, and ranked in the top 40 in the country in overall rushing yards. Three of Mizzou's best years since 2005, Mizzou had the most rushing yards that they had over the course of the last 10 years. 12-2 in 2013, 8-5 on a really good team in 2011, and then 12-2 in 2007. This team goes based on how its running game goes. And this year, when I look at the roster and I look at the depth chart and I look at who they have, I believe in Russell Hansbrough. I think he can be a really damn good running back. I think Russell Hansbrough is a little underrated by a lot of Mizzou fans. He was really good last year. We didn't give him a ton of credit, but he was really good last year. Rushed for almost 700 yards and 6 yards a carry. That is impressive. But we think of Henry Josey as the guy that did it all, and he did do a lot. He rushed for over 1,000 yards. You had Marcus Murphy rush for over 600 yards as well. And that's kind of how Mizzou's done it in the past. They've kind of always had that 2 or 3 running back system where you can, if one guy's not getting it done, you can rely on another one for that game. If one guy goes down for a couple games, it's okay because you've got 1 or 2 other guys that are going to be right there to step up. I'm not sure Mizzou has that this year. MU basically has Russell Hansbrough and then a bunch of other guys. Now you're going to see a little bit of Marcus Murphy in the backfield. I don't think it's going to be 90 carries like you had last year. I think you're going to be closer to probably 50 or 60. And you're going to see Morgan Stewart if he ever gets back from injury, which seems to be one of the problems with him. And you're going to see a lot of Ish Witter, one of the freshman running backs. But I think realistically what you're going to see is Russell Hansbrough taking about 250 handoffs this year. Basically taking what he had last year, adding it on top of what Henry Josey had, and putting that into one. Can he handle that load? I don't know. He's a small guy, but he's a strong guy. He's a solid running back in general. I just told you what he did last year. I mean, he almost had 700 yards as a true sophomore. As a true freshman, played quite a bit here at Missouri. So can he handle the load? I think so. I think he's going to be just fine. He looked like one of the best offensive players that they had. Really, the best offensive player that Mizzou had throughout the three scrimmages. Breaking runs left and right. When he got behind the right side of the offensive line, he was breaking them consistently. But a lot of people just seem to think that Matty Mock's going to have to go out there and tear it up for this team to be good. Matty Mock's going to have to be decent. Matty Mock's going to have to be able to go out there and score some points. He's going to have to be able to get some big plays with his arm. But for this team to be what we all want them to be, what we all expect them to be, what we all hope that they can be, it's going to be the running game that they have to rely on. I just told you the numbers. When they're good, they're top 40 in the country in rushing. When they're bad, like in 2012, they're down closer to 100. They ran for 138 yards per game in 2012, and they were 91st in the country. The result, their first losing season since I can't even remember when. When this team is good, they run the football. When this team is bad, they struggle to run the football. The offensive system is based on the fact that they can run the football. The offensive system is based on the fact that the play action will work and that the linebackers have to respect the play action pass. So can Mizzou be good this year? Of course they can. They can win 10 games if they've got a good running game. But it really is just kind of that simple. For Mizzou to be good, they've got to be able to run the football. And it's something we've all kind of looked over as fans. We've all looked over kind of in the media. And we've all just kind of discounted it because Mizzou was so good running the football last year. And we say, oh yeah, I'm sure they'll be able to do it again. And it's possible they can. But I don't think you're going to see 240 yards a game good. I don't think you're going to see a top 10 rushing attack in the country. I think more realistically, you're going to see Russell Hansbrough, what, averaging 150 yards a game? Maybe total the offense averaging 170, 175? So I think they can be good. I think you're going to see something similar to what you saw in 2007 when they were right around 40 in the country. And if they can do that, if they can get to 175 yards a game on the ground on average, I think this team's going to be just fine. I think this team will be able to make plays through the air because that means immediately that opposing defenses have to respect that play action. And the play action in this offense is incredibly important. So is Matty Mock important? Yeah, of course he is. He's the quarterback. But just as important is the fact that Mizzou can run the football. And the fact that Mizzou needs to be able to run it not only effectively, but they need to be able to run it with the best in the country. They need to be in the upper half of the SEC in rushing yards per game. And the defense, like we mentioned yesterday, has to be good. Coming up next, we're going to talk about a guy and his shower habits. Can we at least be honest about it? You got to do better, ESPN. We're going to discuss it next on the Morning Blitz. KCOU, 88.1 FM online, KCOU.FM. And welcome back. It is the Morning Blitz here on KCOU, 88.1 FM online, KCOU.FM. Dan Zimborski going to join us here in just about 10 minutes on the Morning Blitz. He invented a statistic. He can tell us exactly what to expect from the Royals going down the stretch. We'll discuss all that and much more with him coming up, as I said, just in about 10 minutes or so. So Michael Sam, Mizzou fans love him. The national media can't get enough of him. Josina Anderson and ESPN Sports Center yesterday decided they needed to get an update on Michael Sam, but they wanted to focus on something a little bit different. Here's Josina Anderson's report yesterday on ESPN.
Well, Jay, defensive tackle Kendall Lankford said that Michael Sam is simply just one of the guys, and he seems to be taking a rookie approach in terms of just listening and learning at his own pace. He said that you can tell he's just trying to feel his way through and perhaps see what guys he can relate to. But another Rams defensive player told me that, quote, Sam is respecting our space and that from his perspective, he seems to think that Michael Sam is waiting to kind of take a shower as not to make his teammates feel uncomfortable, while Langford and linebacker Alec Ogletree told me that they didn't know that specifically and also weren't tracking that. Now, while Langford told me, listen, I have not been in the shower at the same time as Michael Sam, he said that there definitely could be a million reasons as to why that is. He said he could be doing extra work on the practice field. He could be riding his bike. He could be doing extra cardio. But overall, Langford said he seems to be adjusting to the life in the NFL and the speed of the game, adding this quote, if he doesn't make our team, I'm pretty sure somebody will definitely pick him up on another team. He has shown some flashes.
Thanks, Josina Anderson. That is Josina Anderson yesterday on ESPN. She went on SportsCenter with that report. Clearly an important report. I mean, who didn't want to know what it was like to shower with a gay dude, right? I mean, we all want to know. I mean, seriously? Seriously. This is the kind of stuff that we're going to report on when it comes to Michael Sam. We need to know what his teammates feel about him being in the shower with them. I thought we were over this. I thought we had already gone through this. Chris Long seems to agree with me. He said on Twitter yesterday, he's the Rams defensive end. Dear ESPN, everyone but you is over it. It got 12,000 retweets and 10,000 favorites. I mean, he couldn't be more correct. I don't feel like anybody saw this report and was like, oh, thanks, Josina Anderson. You know, I really needed to know that. I was interested in seeing how his teammates were reacting to the fact that a gay dude's in their locker room. By the way, important distinction, and thanks to Outsports.com and Sid Ziegler for uncovering this. His locker room is in a completely different area from all the rest of the guys. Not because he's gay, not because he's a defensive end, not because he's a really good pass rusher, but because he's a rookie. The rookies are in a different area than the rest of the veterans because of how Rams Park is set up. So thank you, Josina Anderson, for first of all not checking all of the background information, and I'm blaming Josina Anderson. This is not just on her. This is on ESPN. This is on some producers. This is on whoever decided that was a good idea to air. Whoever decided that was something that needed to go over the air, that person is ridiculous. Just absolutely ridiculous. It's like we are all living in this bizarro world where we can't come to grips with the fact that somebody is different than the rest of us. And when I say the rest of us, I mean he's pretty much similar to about 5 or 6% of the population. Like, is that big of a deal? Is that really that important that we need to spend time out of our day to find out, and we need to send Josina Anderson to St. Louis to figure out what his teammates are saying in response to him taking a shower? Quit trying to flatter yourselves. He's not that interested. First of all, dude's got a boyfriend. Sorry. It seems like he might be taken. Second of all, he's just not interested in you guys. And the fact that somebody had to say like, oh yeah, you know, he's respecting our space. What space? I've been in a locker room. There's so much gay innuendo that goes on in a locker room that it shouldn't matter. I talked to the guys from last year's team. They didn't care. Now, were some of them uncomfortable? Sure, because there's a lot of people uncomfortable with homophobia in this country, or there's a lot of homophobia, excuse me, in this country. It's something we work on and we learn about and we become more educated, and all of a sudden it becomes less weird to us because we're like, oh, that dude likes other dudes. All right. Sounds cool. Like, it's just not that big of a deal. And yet we have reports on SportsCenter that would make you believe otherwise. We have reports that last a minute 30 on a nationally televised 30-minute broadcast. So you've got about 20 minutes of real SportsCenter. And in that SportsCenter, you've got about 5 or 10 minutes that are going to be dedicated to the whole embrace debate culture. So you've got Herm Edwards and Mark Schlereth going on the screen, or you've got somebody from hockey other than Barry Melrose, or you've got just Barry Melrose going up there talking about it, or you've got fantasy football and all these different things. So basically you have 5 or 10 minutes where you have real, true news coverage on SportsCenter. So basically 10% of the newscast was Josina Anderson talking about Michael Sam and his shower habits at Rams Park. Just patently ridiculous. I'm going to play this one more time because of how just absurd this idea is. And I want you to really listen to what she is talking about and what she is saying. And what I got to wonder, what questions did Josina Anderson ask these guys? Like, Chris Long, I was just wondering, what's it like to shower with a gay dude? Like, what do you think he's going to say? He's been with the dude for, almost 5 months now? It's just not that big of a deal. This is Josina Anderson once again yesterday on SportsCenter.
Well, Jay, defensive tackle Kendall Lankford said that Michael Sam is simply just one of the guys, and he seems to be taking a rookie approach in terms of just listening and learning at his own pace.
So he's a rookie. I'm glad we learned that.
Feel his way through and perhaps see what guys he can relate to.
What guys he can relate to? What the hell does that
told
mean?
Me that, quote, Sam is respecting our space.
Oh,
and that
respecting
from
their
his
space. Buzzword. Ding, ding, ding.
Think that Michael Sam is waiting to kind of take a shower as not to make his teammates feel uncomfortable.
Waiting to take a shower, even though he's not in the same area, remember?
They didn't know that specifically and also weren't tracking that. Now, while Lankford told me, listen, I have not been in the shower at the same time as Michael Sam, he said that there definitely could be a million reasons as to why that is. He said he could be doing extra work on the practice field. He could be riding his bike. He could be doing extra cardio. But overall, Lankford said he seems to be adjusting to the life in the NFL and the speed of the game.
So that is Josina Anderson yesterday and her just patently ridiculous report that came from Rams camp on SportsCenter. If you're Kendall Lankford, I feel like you're more worried about the fact that you played with a crazy man in Richie Incognito whenever you were in Miami than you are that you're with St. Louis now and you've got a gay dude on your team. Like, I can't believe how ridiculous it is that we actually had this come up in a legitimate discussion. How about we ask Jeff Fisher what he expects from Michael Sam? Oh, that sounds interesting to me. This is Jeff Fisher on exactly that.
Special teams is not part of the equation for Mike. We're giving him every opportunity to do so, and he's participating, special teams backs and everything, but that's not going to be part of the criteria.
Well, I wonder why. Probably because he's just not very good at special teams, and probably because, quite frankly, just not fast enough. This is Jeff Fisher on what he has seen for Michael Sam's production in the preseason.
I went on record over the last couple of weeks about Michael Sam and his special teams contribution. And it's really unfair to ask him or to have expectations of him to be productive at that, because you just don't, as a defensive end, you're not asked to do those things. And he's not a tweener, as people have referred to. He's a defensive end. He's not a linebacker.
So that is Jeff Fisher on Michael Sam and what he expects from Michael Sam. Pretty self-explanatory. Michael Sam's a defensive end. He rushes the passer. He's really good at it. He has 3 sacks in 3 games. Just has this knack to get into the passer. And yet we put him in this box and we talk about his shower habits and we talk about how his teammates are going to react to him getting in the shower and being in their locker room and maybe being naked with him. It's crazy. I know. It's just, it's unbelievable that this gay dude would be in a shower with you. I'm being sarcastic. I hope you guys can understand that. But I don't understand how we've gotten to this point. How we've gotten to the point where I thought that we were kind of over this. And then all of a sudden, it looks like we are right back where we all started. It looks like we've made no progress whatsoever. And I don't get it. I don't get who was clamoring for that report. I don't get who was actually asking anything about Michael Sam. 3 sacks in 3 games. Seems like he's acclimating well to the NFL to me. That's really all I needed to see. I didn't need to hear a report about him being in the showers. Coming up next, Dan Zimborski literally invented a statistic that projects future outcomes. He joins us next to discuss the Royals and what it's going to take to finish this thing out. That's next to the Morning Blitz, KCOU 88.1 FM, online, KCOU.FM. And welcome back. It is the Morning Blitz here on KCOU 88.1 FM and online at KCOU.FM. We are joined now by Dan Zimborski. We have been joined by him once before. He has incredible information. He literally came up with a statistic. It is the zip statistic, and it projects future outcomes in baseball. Dan, how are you doing today, man?
I'm doing well this morning. How are you guys?
Doing really well. So I guess where I want to begin with you is with the Kansas City Royals and this incredible streak that they've been on now for what seems like the better portion of 6 weeks or so. What changed in the offense over this period of time?
Well, the offense is actually hitting more home runs. They've actually had a pretty good August for hitting home runs, which has been unusual for them this year because they haven't, you know, hit very many home runs, but they've been on a monster run, and at this point of the season, having that first place edge is a big deal.
Is it good enough though to keep this up? Like, are they going to be able to hold off the Tigers in the division?
Well, Zips projections at least have Royals 60-40 winning in the division, and the news that Anibal Sanchez may not return this season—that's also good news for the Royals. So they're in a really good position, the best position they've been in for a long time.
When you look at the Royals and you see tonight Yordano Ventura not going to be on the mound for some back soreness, is that concerning? What should Royals fans think about the fact that their young star pitcher is going to miss a start tonight late in August when people were a little concerned about his innings, that he's going to miss a start this late in the year?
Well, the thing about pitchers is you should be worried about all your pitchers all the time, except maybe R.A. Dickey, because pitchers are always kind of on the precipice of disaster. I think you look at it in the big picture, and if his back's sore, you don't want him on the mound trying to compensate for back soreness, because lots of pitchers have been injured by trying to compensate for soreness elsewhere, changing their delivery. And when you have that change in your mechanics, that can really cause disaster. So if him missing a start can help his back and you know, keep his delivery more the way it usually is, no compensation, I think it's a really good idea.
The Royals' pitching's been good, and we just talked about Yordano Ventura, who's been one of the stars on this staff. The defense, though, has been what's been really, truly elite. What can you tell us about the Royals' defense and what has made them so good this year?
Well, when it comes down to it, they're good because they field a lot of balls hit to them. Alex Gordon is an amazing corner outfielder. It's hard for a corner outfielder to be super valuable defensively because otherwise they wouldn't be in the corner outfield. But Gordon's tremendous. They have a lot of defense everywhere, and it's a big part of why this team is so hard to score on.
Once again, we're speaking with Dan Zimborski. He is an ESPN analyst, and he is the founder of the Zip Statistic. So what's going on with the Tigers right now? I know we talked about, or you brought up, Anibal Sanchez going down, and it sounds like he might not even be back for the rest of the year. At least that's what he said yesterday. What else is going on with him? Was that trade really that bad for Detroit?
Well, the trade for Price, I mean, Price is a huge add. If they didn't have Price right now, they would look even worse. But the thing that with the Tigers is they've traded out a lot of their depth in the last few years. They don't really have those secondary players that can fill in that well. Yeah, they've gotten some great performance from J.D. Martinez, but that's not likely to keep up. But they lose Austin Jackson in the trade. All of a sudden, they can't really replace him that easily. And it's just a team that when something goes wrong, they don't have a lot of players to fill in. You see it with the pitching staff because they're a lot thinner this year. I mean, Doug Fister's gone. They swapped out Drew Smalley directly for David Price. So when they lose a pitcher, they're really having to reach really far back in the depth chart.
Looking across the American League right now and kind of looking at the wild card picture a little bit, what's going to happen in this American League West race? What's going to happen with the Angels and the A's? I thought the A's were going to run away with this thing, and now all of a sudden the Angels are in first place and the A's are in the wild card.
I would st- still give the A's a slight edge. I think it's a superior team by a, not a huge margin, but by a significant one. And the Angels don't have Garrett Richards the rest of the season, which, of course, we haven't really seen the full impact yet until we're looking back at September. I think that the wild card is going to come down between the loser of Kansas City, Detroit, and Seattle. The second wild card, of course. The Angels have the first one if they don't win the division, and the Oakland A's have it if they don't win the division.
Do you like the second wild card? Do you think it's good for baseball?
I do, because the thing about the wild card is, in the first implementation of wild card, you know, the one that we had for the first nearly 20 years, is that, I guess 17 years, is that having a wild card isn't really a significant disadvantage in baseball. Yeah, home field advantage is important, but it's not as important in baseball as in other sports, like in football. But with a second wild card, there's a sizable disadvantage for making the playoffs via the wild card relative to winning the division. And that's what makes it possible to have races between the best two teams in the league. And you're looking at in the AL West. If we had the old wild card format, this would be an almost nothing race because it would just be determining who has one extra game every playoffs at home. And that's nice, but it's not a huge deal. They'd already be starting the rest teams. And you've seen that teams in that position don't really push forward to win the division rather than the wild card. But now it's a do or die thing because whichever team of the Angels and A's does not win the division, they've seen their playoff odds drop in half. So winning the division is a pretty big deal now.
Would you prefer it to see a larger sample size, though? It seems like a one-game playoff when you've got a 162-game season. That seems a little unfair, I guess, would be the word that I would use.
Well, the thing is, any sample size is going to be small.
Yeah.
It's really, if you think about it, not really determining who the best wild card is, but penalizing teams for making the playoffs via the wild card. That's how I look at it.
And once again, we're joined by Dan Zimborski. He's an ESPN analyst. He's the founder of the Zips Statistic. If the Royals do make it to the postseason, if they somehow find a way to hold on to this division lead and they make it to the postseason, do they have as good of a shot as anybody to actually come out of the American League and represent the American League in the World Series?
Oh, I think so. I'm a believer in pretty much every team having a shot when they make the playoffs, and the Royals aren't particularly poorly constructed or anything. That bullpen is going to be hard to face if the Royals get a lead in any postseason game. So, yeah, they have very good odds if they make the playoffs, just like pretty much all the teams. I mean, I'm not so sure about the Brewers, but that's another story.
Well, when you look at, and you brought them up, so I'll go ahead and bring that race up with the Cardinals and the Brewers. What's going to happen down the stretch there? Do the Cardinals have a chance to overtake this division?
I still think the Cardinals did because I'm pretty sure the Cardinals are the better team. You look at the Brewers, it's kind of just been this long trudge for them this season because they had that huge start. So this season, it's just been kind of a race against the clock. Will the season end before they lose the lead? Because they've played 500 since like the second week of April. I think St. Louis has the edge, but we're also running out of clock, and the Brewers are still hanging on to that lead.
Smaller. Am I crazy for thinking that this Cardinals pitching staff has basically been held together with bubble gum and toothpicks all season?
Well, yeah, that's probably accurate. They've lost. I mean, losing Waka is big. I mean, Garcia, of course, they always lose. I mean, he's just kind of held together by string at this point. I don't think so. Yeah, they've had some setbacks in the rotation, and I think that's why they haven't caught the Brewers yet.
And once again, we're speaking with Dan Zimborski. He is an ESPN analyst. He is the founder of the Zips Statistic. So as we go forward, as we progress, and what, 30 games left? Crazy. I can't believe that we are this far and the Royals are still in it. It just still hasn't hit me. What are your projections going out from here? What do you think is going to happen throughout the rest of the season? Who do you have in the playoffs for the American League?
Well, I think that most of the races are fairly set. Baltimore is overwhelmingly likely to win the division in the AL East. They have the best clear shot at a division of any team in the AL, so that really helps their World Series odds because less chance of them having to do a play-in game. The Nationals are looking very solid in the NL East, and I'm pretty sure the Dodgers are going to hold on in the NL West. So really, I think it's going to mostly come down to the the divisions in the AL Central, AL West, NL Central, and the wild cards. And then we'll take it from there. We've seen a lot of the pretenders start falling out of the race. I don't think the Yankees are going to really look as close as they are in a month. I think the Blue Jays have just, they've been a mess, compounded by not doing anything at the trade deadline. And I think they're going to fall out for good fairly quickly as well.
Once again, he's Dan Zimborski. I have one last question for you. How the hell did you come up with this statistic? How does that even come about?
Oh, well, I don't know how familiar you are with Vorish McCracken. He was a Sabre magician, worked for the Red Sox, did a lot of work. He's the one who did dips in the 90s. Well, at the time, none of the projection systems were doing anything with his research, so I decided to make one that used some of his research, which I called Zips, since his thing was dips and it rhymed. It started out as S-I-P-S, Sips, but that sounds like some kind of hipster juice box they sell at a bar, you know, get some sips. You've got water from the whatever river. So then I added the Z instead, and it became Zips. And then I wrote it like Chips, because I liked that show when I was a little kid. I am strange. I realize that. and so the idea was, because there weren't a lot of free public projection systems at the time, a friend of mine named Chris Dial and I, we talked about doing something similar to later what Marcel came from Tom Tango. But we never really got around to it, and then I started doing it, and then I started implementing more things, and one thing leads to another, and I had this massive set of algorithms, and it's been fun. You learn a lot while doing these things.
Did you ever expect sabermetrics to be this big in baseball, though, and this big in the public?
No, I didn't. I was involved in the fairly early internet sabermetric community. We were on a format called Usenet news groups, which aren't really around anymore. But that's where a lot of the Saber guys you still see today hung out. And Moneyball came out, and there was more attention given to sabermetrics. And I guess we all kind of became employable.
He's Dan Zimborski. He's at D Zimborski. It's S-Z-Y-M-B-O-R-S-K-I for those of you that want to know how to spell it. He's an ESPN analyst. As he just said, he's the founder of the Zip Statistic, and he joins us here on the Morning Blitz. Dan, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Really
thanks
appreciate the time.
You guys have a good one.
Yeah, you too. That is Dan Zimborski. He is from ESPN, and he's the founder of the Zip Statistic. So 60-40. That the Royals have, that's the odds, that he said the Royals have to win the division. Interesting. Very interesting. And it sounds like he's of the opinion that the Royals are, if they don't win the division, they're probably going to get in with that wild card, that second wild card. Now, you got to hope if you're a Royals fan that you're going to get that division and you're going to be able to get that locked up. But God only knows that Royals fans are pessimistic and that they see that 1.5 game lead and they just don't think it's going to be enough. I'm Brandon Kiley. The show's The Morning Blitz. Reed Foster up next on KCOU with The Fix.